are listening to Speaking of Strange with Joshua P. Warren on News Radio 570 WWNC.
Tonight is the five-year anniversary of this show, and I obviously wanted to do something very special. Well, here you go. For years, I have followed the work of tonight's guest. He is a man who risked everything in the name of truth. And at one time, he was so harassed that he couldn't even walk down the street in England. And now, so many of his, well, predictions, if you will, have come to pass that he is vindicated. People are saying, okay, I'm finally ready to listen. What is going on? What can you tell us? His message has not changed. You may find parts of it shocking, but you must open your mind and consider that reality is much more complex than you may have ever imagined. That said, it is with extreme pleasure that I say, David Icke, welcome to Speaking of Strange.
Thank you, Joshua, and congratulations. 5 years, and, you know, it's programs like this that have built up over the last 10 years or so, particularly, and even more in the last five, that have really been essential to challenging the barely one-dimensional version of the world that we get through the mainstream media. So, you know, good on you. I think it's brilliant.
Well, it's nice to hear you say that, because I've seen a lot of shows sort of come and go over the past 5 years, and we just continue trying to bring fresh thoughts to the air through the media. And, of course, I followed your work for many years, but for people who have never heard the name David Icke, if you would just give us some basic background. I know you've done this a million times, but sort of tell us, you know, how you got involved in the pursuit of knowledge that you are now in.
Well, I was born into a working class background, as we call it in England, in Leicester in the English Midlands, and lived a pretty poor childhood, though I didn't think it was poor at the time because everyone around me was the same, and just wanted to be a professional soccer player, which I managed to achieve. But at the age of 21, my career ended with rheumatoid arthritis, and well, went into journalism, then into television. I became a national spokesman for the British Green Party in the mid-late 80s. And then in 1990, some extraordinary, I guess people would call them paranormal experiences, but it depends how myopic you think reality is, whether they're paranormal or whether they're perfectly normal and explainable. But from a public perspective of the way most people see the world, they were paranormal experiences, which put me on a road of extraordinary synchronicity from the turn of the 1990s, where I was on a journey which is still motoring on, where I just kept walking into information, written information, books, documents, people, personal experiences that were in the most extraordinarily extraordinary way of handing me pieces in a puzzle in the order that was easiest to understand them. I started to put the pieces together, which showed me very clearly from, you know, quite early on that the world was very different to the one that we all think we're living in, and it's controlled by very different forces to the ones we think are controlling it. And this just went on and on and on, year after year, right up to the present day. The first few years of the 90s was fundamentally concentrating and focusing on what you might call the five sense level of the conspiracy to enslave the human mind. And what I mean by five sense level is our daily experience in our jobs, in our lives, in finance, in politics, and all the rest of it. And then as the years went on, the information started to move me through that into another level, an interdimensional level, if you like, and the understanding that, you know, this reality that we think we're looking at that seems so solid and seems so total is actually just a tiny, tiny frequency range which scientists call visible light, which our five senses can access and our eyes can access. And then it moved on through that into the nature of reality itself. And it's funny, you know, Joshua, I've noticed over the years that if you don't ask the big questions, you've got no chance of getting the big answers. And most people, because the system puts, and with this financial situation now, it's a wonderful and extreme example. The system puts people into a state of survival, surviving to pay the rent at the end of the month or the mortgage, surviving another week, surviving another month. And what that survival mode does is keep people symbolically with their head down. And not asking the big questions. You know, I've had people over the years say to me, look, mate, it may be interesting, but, you know, I live in the real world. I've got to pay the mortgage at the end of the month. And I understand that, but understanding the big answers to the big questions is fundamental to breaking the cycle of enslavement that has your head down trying to meet the check at the end of the month. So these big questions are the way to unravel, to understand, and to take control back of daily experience, the real world that people talk about. But actually, it's not a real world. It's an illusory world. And once you realize it's illusory, you can take control of your life back, because illusions only control you when you think they're real. And most people think the illusions are real, and so the illusions control them, and so it goes on. So this area now, Joshua, of my journey is absolutely the focus of what I'm doing. What is reality? I mean, I've been writing and talking about that for years, but, you know, I have absolutely no doubt now, after 20 years of research and extraordinary experiences, paranormal and within this world in terms of hard facts and all the rest of it, that we live in a very, very, very much more, a staggeringly more advanced version of a computer program. And that what we call mind is part of that program. And what I call consciousness, that eternal part of us, that is beyond the program. And the idea is to keep us in mind, in intellect, overwhelmingly in the left side of the brain, which is basically sees everything in terms of apartness, in terms of five-sense reality, so we don't become conscious and therefore be able to see what we can't see when we're only stuck in the mind program. So this has been my journey, and where I am now is the most exciting part of it, because it offers the answers to end this enslavement. Because the enslavement of humanity is the enslavement of the human mind, or, as I'm understanding more and more as the years pass, the imposing upon humans and the manipulation upon humans of a state of mind program rather than a state of consciousness, which is eternal and is beyond the program. And these days, I'm just buzzing because of where my life is taking me in terms of understanding these things.
Now, when you speak to just packed out stadiums, what does that tell you about the people who are sort of waking up, so to speak? Are we waking up, or are we still trapped in the same old game?
Well, this is a heck of an area that you've opened up, and I think if you gave me a list, I would say all of the above. There are different levels of this. Yes, for sure. More and more people are waking up and changing their sense of reality, and therefore changing their perception of self and perception of the world and events in the world. I mean, I've kind of been a barometer, Joshua, of this, because when I started out nearly 20 years ago now, I mean, I couldn't fill a phone box. I was mass ridiculed in the most extreme way, which you've indicated in the introduction a little, but it was just extraordinary levels of ridicule that my family went through. And now, all this time later, it's fundamentally switched. And now people that were laughing their socks off before are now reading my books and coming to my presentations. But then there's another level of it, which this thing about mind is the mind program is very important, because you can move from one part of the mind program, i.e. vote for Bush, I'm an extreme Republican, or vote for Obama, I'm a Democrat, and there's two sides and it's all real and all that stuff. You can go from that perception of reality while clearly being in the mind program, but then you can switch it and you can see it differently. You can say, oh, no, there's not two parties. There's only one party with two names and all the rest of it. Now, that's a more enlightened level of the mind program. You're starting to see a higher level of it, but it can still be the mind program. And one of the things that really struck me, Joshua, in recent months, in fact, the last year, really, is how people who appeared to understand the way the system is manipulated and the way, you know, the Democrats and the Republicans and same in other countries are different names for the same group, who, when Barack Obama appears on the scene, suddenly all that understanding just gets cast aside. Oh, yeah, I know it works like that, mate. And I know they're two parties, but really they're one. I know all that, but he's different. And you go, hold a second. So someone of genuinely independent mind has come out of nowhere, has attracted record funding for a presidential campaign, vast tracts of it from Wall Street, and he is going to be different and independent. I mean, are these Wall Street guys, turkeys voting for Thanksgiving? What's going on? Of course, it's just another part of the program. But because people are still in the mind program, they can still get pulled into another part of it, which is Obama is not Bush, so therefore Obama must be good. No, not like that. When you become conscious, or more conscious as I would perceive it, beyond the mind, where you come from a knowing, an intuitive knowing, rather than a working it out through thought, then you can see through Obama like you can see through a window. But you can, for instance, be in the New Age arena, where they talk about spirituality and they talk about being free from religion and all that stuff. It's just another mind program. It's just part of the mind program, which entraps them in a belief system which is different to the Christian belief system or the Jewish belief system or the Islamic belief system, but it's still a belief system. And what the program wants is belief systems, because what belief systems do are create limitation. Once you take on a belief system, once you can say to someone, Joshua, who are you, and they say, I'm A, they're in the mind program, because consciousness is all possibility. It's infinite awareness. It's not limitation. And the mind program is all limitation, because it's a program. And as a result of that, when you get pulled into states of perception where you can see limitation, where you are an ism or an eanity in terms of your belief system, that locks you into a sense of limitation, a sense of I can't. And if you want to control people, then you must put them in a state of I can't. The more limited they are in their perception of possibility and the perception of their own possibility, the more control external force, the centralized force, has over them.
Okay, well, that's well said, but we have to take our first break here, and what a wonderful way to start off this interview, because tonight we are going to dig into some of the deepest, most complex mysteries and questions out there, and obviously my guest tonight, he has been studying these questions more than anybody. His website is davidicke.com. That's davidicke.com. And he's coming to the United States soon, so I hope that you will go to his website and stay abreast of his work. There is so much more to come when we return on this special anniversary edition of Speaking of Strange. I'm Joshua P. Warren.
this is George Norrie of Coast to Coast AM, and you are listening to Speaking of Strange with none other than Joshua P. Warren.
All right, you are joining me for the big anniversary edition of Speaking of Strange. I am your host, Joshua P. Warren, joined right now by David Icke. He is going to be in the United States soon. He'll be in the Los Angeles area there around the 14th through the 16th of February. We'll learn more about that later. But first, let me say, you know, David, I know as somebody who has followed your work that it is very vast and complex. And yet, 9 times out of 10, when I have told people I'm going to have David Icke on the program, they say, oh, he's the reptilian guy, right?
Right.
Let me just go ahead and get it out of the way. I know that this is something that you're probably just inundated with. You're probably sick of talking about it. But, what is the philosophy regarding the idea that there are reptilian beings in our society?
Well, I don't get tired of talking about it. What I would emphasize to people is, you know, we live in a multi-level reality, and, you can talk about one level of it, and you can talk about another level of it. It depends, what area you want to talk about. What happened with this whole reptilian thing was that through the 1990s, when I was uncovering the basic structure of how the world's controlled by a few people today, and it's a very simple structure. It has to be. It's too complex. It can work. I started asking the question, when did this start? When did this structure start getting put together? Because it was very clear that this structure of control was not put together in 5 years or 50 years. It goes back a long time. And you start to realize that the institutions of society, of authority, have not been infiltrated by this force. They were actually created by this force to start with, to give the illusion of freedom while fundamentally controlling people. And the system they use is pyramids within pyramids. If you look at any organization today, whether it's a government or classically a secret society or a university, whatever, they're all structured as pyramids where you have the tiny few at the top who are the only people who know how all the contributions within the pyramid, the organization, fit together to create the direction and the agenda. Everyone else within the pyramid, especially the lower you get to the base of the pyramid, where the vast majority of people work in these organizations, they have not got a clue what the big agenda is, because they have not a clue how all the different contributions fit together. They just go into work, they do their job, and they go home. They're not trying to manipulate anybody, but they haven't got a clue what they're contributing to. Only the few at the top do. And these pyramids fuse into bigger pyramids and bigger pyramids until you've got a pyramid that encompasses, for instance, the whole of the global banking system. And when you get to that level, whether Merrill Lynch is taken over by Bank of America or Lehman Brothers is absorbed by someone else doesn't matter, because the people at the top of the pyramid own the game. You know, if you own American football, it doesn't matter what the scores are of a weekend, whether so-and-so beats so-and-so or so-and-so beats so-and-so, because you own the game. You can't lose. And this is how the banking system works, how the transnational corporation system works. Actually, transnational corporation under different names, if the truth be told. And so you've got this pyramid within pyramid system like Russian dolls. And it was very clear after a while that all these different pyramids in all these different areas of our society led to the same network of families who have fiercely protected their interbreeding and have been obsessively interbreeding for centuries, actually probably thousands of years. Yes, thousands of years, never mind probably. And so the question then was, A, when did this start? And B, why are these families at the top of these global pyramids obsessed with interbreeding? And I started going back, trying to find an answer to both questions. And eventually I find myself thousands of years BC, and this is not the start of it, it goes much further, this is the point where you can pick it up, thousands of years BC, where I started to pick up a common theme, not just in ancient Sumer, which became Babylon, which is now Iraq, which is, it seems to be a massively important area from where these bloodlines came out of, Sumer, or at least came out of at that time. Like I say, it goes back much further. But the same theme can be found all over the world. And this theme is this, an interbreeding between a non-human race and humans, creating a hybrid bloodline, a fusion of the two. And as I went deeper and deeper into this, one of the common themes, not all the time by any means, but a very, very common theme, is that this non-human race took on a reptilian form. And then you start looking around the ancient world at the accounts and the legends and what have you, and you keep coming up against this reptilian theme. And at the time that I was compiling all this, and at the same time this was happening, I was, again, in my synchronistic way that my life has been since I started to have my experiences near 20 years ago, I kept bumping into people, because I've now been to 47 countries researching this, bumping into people all over the world from endless different walks of life who were telling me the same basic story. And that is how they had seen people, often in positions of power, but far from always, who had shifted in front of their eyes from a human form into a reptilian form and then back again. And, of course, you put this on the back burner, and that's the way I work, you see. When I come across things, I don't dismiss them, but don't accept them either. I put them on what I call the back burner, and I let them simmer, and I see what else comes up. But over the years, I've just had, compiled an enormous amount of information about this. And I first wrote about it in a book called The Biggest Secret, and it came out, first of all, in 1998, I think it was. And when it came out, I got a call when I was speaking in South Africa from a guy called Credo Mutwa, who is a very famous Zulu shaman, or Senusi, as they call him, in South Africa. He was saying he had to talk to me urgently. So I got a meeting with him, and, I spoke to him for like 2 days. The only thing we did was sleep. And he said to me, first of all, how do you know about the Chitahuria? Who were they? He said, the children of the serpent, or the children of the python, as it translates. And he told me how he had been initiated 50 years ago. He's 83 now. Oh, he's not 83. He's in his late 80s. And now he was 83 when I first met him, I think, or getting on that way. And he said he was initiated into secret societies, shaman secret societies in Africa 50 years ago. And these secret societies were created when the British and the Dutch, but particularly the British, when they went into South Africa, Southern Africa, through people like Cecil Rhodes, a massive frontman for this network of bloodlines, in Credo's words, they sought out the shaman who, of course, held the knowledge of the history of Africa and verbal, etc., and were passing it on to the next generation. And in his words, they milked the minds of the shaman and then killed them. So to keep the knowledge alive under this fierce onslaught, they created secret societies to pass it on. And, I did a video with him called The Reptilian Agenda, in which he talks for about 6 hours. Fascinating stuff. And he describes the horrendous initiation rituals that they put them through, and he had to go through because they were there to make sure that you really, really wanted to know this information and to keep out any interlopers, if you like, who would almost certainly not go through what they were asked to do. Anyway, he said that what he learned when he started getting into this secret society 50 years ago was that in the distant past, as we perceive it, there was an interbreeding between a reptilian race and humans, creating a hybrid bloodline, and they call them the Chitahuri, the children of the serpent. And it was extraordinary to me just to talk to him, because I'd gleaned my information from outside Africa, and it was this black man in Africa revealing to me the hidden history of Africa, and it was a mirror of what I had uncovered elsewhere in the world. And so I started going deeper and deeper and deeper into this, and I was getting confirmation from insiders, if you like, who were saying, you know, it sounds fantastic, but it's true. And I tell you interesting things you pick up. Like, I've got a friend who's a scientist, and he's got an associate of his who I don't agree with it, but he's been doing a research project in the last year or so to develop iris scanning technology. And he, therefore, in one project that he told my scientist friend about, looked through a microscope at 2,300 pairs of eyes as part of the research. And this guy had never heard of me. He doesn't know anything about what I'm writing or anything. But he told my friend, he said, from what I saw, about 4% of the eyes that I looked into were of reptilian type. And, you know, people, because they have a certain perception of how things are, they dismiss things by reflex action, not because they're wrong, not because they're not possible, because they're different. It's the same principle as the reflex action to those that said the earth was round was it must be flat, it's impossible to be round, we'd fall off the bottom and all that stuff. But until you, when you introduce the law of gravity, suddenly the apparently impossible becomes perfectly logical. And it's only when, Joshua, that you start to realize and understand the illusory nature of reality that you realize that shifting between seeing one form to another form is not fantastic. It's perfectly logical, but it's not logical if you perceive reality as a solid place. Of course, quantum physics has shown that it's not a solid place. It's not a solid place at all. And the reality that we think is outside of us is actually in our heads. We're decoding it. Like a television decodes frequency fields into pictures on the screen, we decode frequency fields into pictures only, and our screen is our brain, and indeed the genetic structure in general, but particularly the brain, and we decode them into three-dimensional holographic forms, which appear to be three-dimensional, appear to be solid. But the only place that that world exists is in our decoded reality, in our brains. People, even mainstream science will confirm that, you know, what the five senses do is they take information, vibrational information, overwhelmingly, they turn it into electrical information, they pass it to the brain, and the brain then decodes that into a reality through things like the visual cortex in the brain. So when you realize that, you realize that, you know, when you see an energy form, you're decoding that form. And if it's a human energy form, you'll decode it in what appears to be a human. But if that energy form shifts into another form, then you'll decode it into something else. It's like if I picked up the zapper button for the television in front of me, I would go channel 1, channel 2, channel 1. Now that, on the screen, symbolically, is a shapeshift. I've gone from one picture to another picture to another picture. And but because we understand different channels and what have you, we don't have a problem with that. But when we are decoding reality, we can switch from one channel to another channel without realizing we're doing it. And what we're decoding is what appears to be a shift in form. You know, you can't shift from a solid physical body, human, to a solid physical body, reptilian, or anything else. But that's not what we're perceiving. What we're doing is looking at an energy field which appears to be human. We decode it as that. Then that energy field shifts into a reptilian form, not a solid energy field shifting, a vibrational field shifting, because that's what everything is in the end. And suddenly we decode the second field, and that, in our decoded reality, appears to be us seeing a shift from a solid form to another solid form and back again. It's the same principle with what we call UFOs and other paranormal phenomena. You know, when people say, I saw this UFO, or saw this light in the sky, or saw this whatever, and it just disappeared in front of my eyes, and people go, hold on a second, you know, what are you on? That's ridiculous. It's impossible. But it's not, because the frequency field that or the frequency range that the human sight can access is tiny, tiny, almost infinitesimal. And if something enters that frequency range, you see it. If it changes its vibrational state, quickens its vibrational state, if you like, and leaves that frequency range we call visible light, you don't see it. And in the way you're decoding that situation, suddenly you see something that comes out of nowhere, and then it's disappeared into nowhere. But it hasn't disappeared. It's changed. It's left the frequency range that you can access. So when you start to understand the illusory nature of reality, you start to realize that a lot of these fantastic stories and so-called paranormal experiences are perfectly logical and explainable, including shape-shifting, because it's, like I say, it's not a shift from a solid form to a solid form. It's a shift in the way we decode what we are perceiving. And all these things put together brought me to the conclusion that there are reptilian entities that are operating just outside the frequency range of human sight.
Okay, well,
are manipulating apparently human families, bloodlines within the frequency range of human sight. So we see them as human. We see the Bushes as human. We see the Rockefellers, the Rothschilds, etc., as human, because we're decoding their five sense level, which is what our five sense sight does. But if we could see just beyond that, we'd see overshadowing these people any entities that were anything but human.
All right, we got to go ahead and take another break, and it makes perfect sense to me, because obviously all reality is based upon subjective perception.
Exactly.
And, you know, even if you're going to take a meter and measure something, it's up to a human to interpret whatever that meter says. So when we come back, we will continue this amazing conversation here. David Icke is my guest, and, you know, I'll ask him, what is the ultimate agenda? Why are they here, and what is happening in the world right now? How does Barack Obama fit into this? How does the economic situation we're seeing in this country and really around the world fit into this? Big questions, and he is a man who can give us a unique brand of insight. Again, his website is davidicke.com. That last name is spelled I-C-K-E. DavidIcke.com. I'm Joshua P. Warren, and Speaking of Strange will continue right after this.
I was a highwayman. Along the coach roads I did ride, with sword and pistol by my side.
And welcome back to Speaking of Strange on News Radio 570 WWNC, the talk of the mountains, and AM 1400, The Peak. I am Joshua P. Warren. It's the big five-year anniversary show, and my guest tonight is David Icke. So, David, I guess two questions. These reptilian-type beings, why are they here, and what is the evidence right now that, say, Barack Obama or other political influences are a part of this overall, well, scheme, if you will?
Well, you know, there's so many levels of this, and, you know, as I've been saying to people, this reptilian element of it, it's just a part of a bigger program that we're part of, you know. It's important to stress that and keep coming back to that. We're in a incredibly advanced version of a computer program. There's a heck of a lot more to know about that. my life's taking me in that direction. But that's the basics of it. When you are in mind, you're in the program. When you're in consciousness, you can change the program, and you can see the program. And the idea is to keep us in a state of mind, in a state of intellect, which doesn't mean you have to be a university professor or some academic to have an intellect. I mean, I'm talking about the left side of the brain. And it's interesting that when I talk to people who are extremely intellectual, like I spoke earlier this year at the Oxford Union, at Oxford University, you have to put it, Joshua, in baby steps, because they're so into the intellect, they can't open their minds to see things that are beyond the way the left brain sees the world, which is everything apart from everything else, everything solid and all the rest of it. It's quite bizarre. You can talk to an audience of the general public and they get it. But you talk to, you know, big-time advanced students and academics, and they just can't get it because they're enslaved by the left brain, and they literally can't compute what you're saying. They can't filter it. It's a bizarre thing, and quite funny to observe and to do. So the whole reptilian thing is just another part of it. And you know, there are many people, and good luck to them, who are exposing the conspiracy on the level of the five senses, the banking scam, the political scams, and all the rest of it, the engineered wars, the engineered 9/11, and all the rest of it. And absolutely they should, and I do that all the time myself as well. It's very important. This conspiracy is not orchestrated by men in dark suits sitting around a table. It's too synchronistic. It's too detailed. The way it plays out is too perfect for it to be orchestrated like that. The people in dark suits sitting around a table are a level, like the reptilian element is a level of this program playing out. And it's interesting on the reptilian side of this, for people who haven't come across it, is that we have massive reptilian genetics, all of us. The oldest part of the human brain is known by science as the R-complex, the reptilian brain, as they call it, and that's where we get the survival instinct from. Things like fight or flight, where we face danger and we either hit the guy or run. And it's a very low level of perception, a very low level of reaction, and it's the survival mechanism. Now, if you are a reptilian entity and you want to lock the population into your frequency so that you can create what is the ambition, a hive mind, then you want them locked into your frequency range, your frequency pattern. And if you are vibrating, resonating to a reptilian genetic type or vibrational pattern, then you want people locked into the reptilian genetics, particularly in the brain, because that then starts to lock people into you. Now, you look at the world, mate. You look at the way the world's structured and the way the system's structured. What is it doing? It's daily, constantly putting people en masse around the world for various reasons, whether it's finding food by the end of the day, or whether it's paying the mortgage, or whether it's worrying about the future, whether it's concerned for a war or whatever. It's putting people in a constant state of survival. You know, when you fear you're going to lose your job, you fear that you are not going to pay the rent at the end of the month, you fear that you're not going to get food by the end of the day for your family, that locks you into survival mode, fight or flight, and all that stuff. It locks you into the reptilian brain. And that's the idea. It locks people into that part of the genetic structure of the human form, which is a holographic form, which resonates to the frequency of these reptilian entities. And therefore, communication, connection, manipulation is possible. And when you go into consciousness has the awareness that it is eternal awareness, that this is an illusion. The physical body is just a vehicle to experience this frequency range. It's not who we are. And all these things that frighten people into the survival mode just disappear. So it's vital that force, which is behind this game, if you like, you know, they've got us into in a place where they can control us en masse and manipulate us en masse, which is what they do. And things like food additives and chemicals and poisons and all this stuff that we consume more and more and more in food and drink, these are all destabilizing the body computer, as I call it, which is a electrochemical organism. And if you disrupt the electrochemical balance, then it doesn't work as well as it should, and therefore you get a distorted decoding of reality. And what these chemical cocktails are, called food and drink these days, are destabilizing chemically, and all the electromagnetic pollution that we're getting, mobile phones and all the rest of it, are destabilizing us electromagnetically, and they are creating distorted senses of reality. It's no accident at all that when you look at the graph of the vast increase in chemical additives to food and drink, particularly for the young, in sodas and other foods targeting the young, that the graph of childhood behavior problems goes up with it. Why? Because we are poisoning our children, destabilizing their body computer decoding mechanism through destabilizing them chemically and electrically, electromagnetically, particularly chemically in food and drink, and therefore it distorts the way they read reality, therefore it distorts the way they behave. My son now is a big strapping 26-year-old, or my oldest son, and every time he had a certain drink when he was a kid, he just went into hyperactivity, and so we stopped the drink, obviously, and when we did, it disappeared because the chemicals in the drink were interacting with his unique energy field. And were affecting him in the way that it did, and so we're being attacked, particularly the young are being attacked on multi levels to destabilize our reading of reality, so that we read it in a distorted way. Because if we do that, of course, we become controllable, because we're never going to see through the game if we can't even read the game accurately.
Well, and now if we go to your website, davidicke.com, there is a photograph of Barack Obama. There is a big stamp over it that says fraud.
Yeah.
Is Barack Obama capable of shifting into a reptilian form?
Well, I have no idea. I mean, but the point is, these families at the very top of the pyramid are these hybrid bloodlines, and I include in that the British royal family. Quick thing that's worth mentioning is right the way back, and this is confirmed by cultures all around the world, right the way back in the ancient world, these bloodlines, these hybrid bloodlines, were considered special. They were considered part human and part God, as these non-human entities were perceived as gods. And that's where you get the idea of demigods and semigods and, part God, part human. This is this hybrid genetics we're talking about. And these hybrid so-called part God people became the royal bloodlines all over the world, because they were perceived to be special. For instance, the ancient emperors of China claimed the right to rule because of their genetic descendants from what they called the serpent gods. And Kreda Mutwa in South Africa was saying the same thing, that the royal bloodlines of Africa were perceived in the same way. They were the hybrid bloodlines of the children of the serpent, as they call them there. When the bloodlines expanded up into Northern Europe there became the European royal families, or royal family in truth, and aristocracy who took over Europe, they were these same hybrid bloodlines. And the reason the royal and aristocratic bloodlines are obsessed with interbreeding with each other to, quote, keep the genes up, is because they are they understand at the highest level, of them anyway, that what they're doing is holding a genetic structure. And it works like this. These reptilian entities, and again, I emphasize, this is only one level of it. This is not the origin. This is just another level of the whole thing playing out. But these reptilian entities that operate just outside of human sight, they obviously resonate to a certain frequency because of, of what they are. They seek to manipulate this reality, what we call five-sense visible light reality, via apparently human people who are resonating, or their bodies are resonating within five-sense reality. And it's like, you know what you see in these laboratory experiments sometimes, where there's a big tank, and what's in the tank is so dangerous that no one can go in the tank. So what they do is the scientists have these big gloves and hands that go into the tank, and they're standing outside the tank, and they put their hands in, and then they can manipulate what's going on in the tank without actually going in the tank. Many people will have seen the way scientists work in that way. Well, symbolically, that's what we're looking at. We're looking at the hybrid bloodlines, and why are they important? Because they have a much greater infusion of reptilian genetics, more than the rest of us do.
Okay, well, I got to go ahead and stop here for another break, but it's a great place to pause, because when we come back, we will continue exploring what exactly is happening right now as the world shifts into this new and often confusing situation, especially considering, you know, the economy seems to be in the dumps. We have a president who has almost unprecedented charisma. He has the support of the legislature. All this is coming up next hour. We're going to continue this conversation with David Icke. And also, at some point, I want to ask him in this next hour about 2012. Is there a particular reason that so many cultures think something major is going to happen in that year? It's the big five-year anniversary of this show. I'm Joshua P. Warren. There is much more with David Icke.